This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Beautiful, bountiful, beloved immortal beings and good-looking people. Maybe you're good-looking because you're always looking for and finding the good. That's a definition of a good-looking person. Always looking for and finding the good, and you have found good and abundant because you have consciously and conscientiously turned into the joy of living with your humble host, Barry Shore. And I'm so glad that you're here. And we are glad that you're here. You're glad you're here because you know that by listening to the people we bring you, and this today is one of the best that's going to ever happen to you, is that you become a better being. You become the best you possible. And that's the only reason you tuned in, because you care the most, the entire world, about you. And that's great, because when you're the best you, you make the world a better place. You build bridges of harmony. You create more joy, happiness, peace, and love in the world. And you are now, at this very moment, joined by 367,822 people around the world. All have tuned in for one reason, because they care about being the best they possibly can, of unfolding who you are. And you know that when you do that, you will be healthier and wealthier. Who doesn't want that? That's what Jack Canfield said to me when he was interviewing me. He said, Barry, the joy of living is so wonderful. What's the benefit? I said, Jack, people will be healthier and wealthier. And he says, who doesn't want that? So that's the reason you have tuned into the joy of living, because you care the most about you. And you know that as a result, you'll be healthier and wealthier, make the world a better place. So in this particular show, we deal with the three fundamentals of life. And these three fundamentals are, number one, life. Your life has purpose. And when you lead, number two, a purpose-driven life, you can go mad. Now, in this case, MAD is a wonderful acronym that stands for go make a difference. That's what MAD stands for, make a difference. Lead a purpose-driven life, you make a difference in the world. And the third fundamental is that you can uncover and unlock the power and the secrets of everyday words and terms. Simple example, www. Right now, you're listening to or watching through this remarkable, magical, mystical medium called the internet. So ask anybody, what does www stand for? And invariably, they'll tell you it has to do with the internet. And factually speaking, they're correct. But in our world, the world of the positive, purposeful, powerful, and pleasant, www stands for, drumroll, fanfare, da-da-da-da. What a wonderful world. And what a is a word, right? W-H-E-T-A. And of course, a tip of the hat and a big thank you to Louis Armstrong, Satchmo, for enabling that song to go viral and touch not just tens or hundreds of millions of people, but billions of people around the planet. And you know the way to even hear the opening bars of what a wonderful world. What do you do right away? You smile. You can't help it. Now, smile is one of the most important, powerful, positive acronyms you could ever internalize, utilize, and leverage in your life, because SMILE stands for seeing miracles in life every day. Every day, seeing miracles. Now, before the pandemic, and hopefully, God willing, very soon be able to be speaking with audiences again and hugging and interacting and things like that. But just before the pandemic, I'm speaking to a fairly large group, over 5,000 people. I tell the story about Barry Shore, and I use the acronym SMILE, seeing miracles in life every day. And people raise their hand and say, hey, Barry Shore, I've been up for hours where I haven't seen any miracles. And I asked them, are you here? Can you hear? Can you see? Can you stand? Can you talk? Can you walk? You have water, drink, food to eat, a place to sleep, family, friends? Every single one of those is a miracle. And what's the simple proof? Simple proof. 1 million people didn't get out of bed this morning. You know why? They died. By definition, you didn't. If you're watching, you're listening, you're here. If you're alive, you have an obligation to live exuberantly. An obligation to live exuberantly. Now, thank God we have over 325,000 people that come every single week. And now you're bringing your friends, and we appreciate that. So over 367,000 people, and maybe by the end of the program, I've over 375,000 people. But the point is that people come because they understand that there is an opportunity for you to choose how you want to live in life. You know the story of Barry Shore. So imagine the following, standing up in the morning, hale and hearty, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, and that evening be in the hospital, totally, completely paralyzed. And it was not from an automobile accident. It was not a spinal injury. A rare disease took over my body in a matter of hours, rendered me a quadriplegic. 144 days in the hospital. I was in a hospital bed in my own home for 2 years. I couldn't turn over by myself. 4 years in a wheelchair. I had braces on both my legs, my hips to my ankles for a year and a half. That was progress. Thank God today I'm able to be vertical and ambulatory with the help of a 7-foot walking wand made for me by a Zen master. So I'm a triped, not a biped, but I still can't walk up a curb by myself. I can't walk up a stair by myself. I help 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. But you hear my voice, positive, purposeful, powerful, and pleasant. Why? All because of one word, smile. Seeing miracles in life every day. Let me tell you a quick story. My 8-year-old niece comes over to me the other day and says, Uncle Barry, can we spell smile? S-M-I-E-L. And I thought about it. I said, smile, sounds the same. Why not? I asked her how come. Because she said, because then it would stand for seeing miracles in everyday life out of the mouth of babes. But what was she doing? She was creating the kind of world that she wants to live in. And create stands for causing rethinking, enabling all to excel. Rethinking is the key of the mind. You have a brain, 100 plus billion brain cells, and over 150 trillion synapses connecting all those brain cells. And they're there for more than just deciding what kind of latte you want this morning. The ability to know what it is that you want and to go forward and think that way. Neuro-linguistic programming for yourself. You can create the kind of world that you want to live in, a world of beauty, truth, and love, and kindness. Now, I have to interrupt myself and warn everybody in advance that your humble host does use a lot of four-letter words. I'll use them throughout the show. I even use the four-letter F-U word, and I do it because of the shock value and it's fun. Now, the four-letter words that we use because we live in a positive, purposeful, powerful, pleasant world are live, love, life, hope, grow, free, gift, pray, play. Four-letter words. And the four-letter F-U word is fun. F-U, capital N, capital N. And people say, but Barry Shore, fun's only spelled with three letters, not in our world, the world of the positive, purposeful, powerful, and pleasant. Fun is spelled F-U, capital N, capital N. So after the show is over, and you see your family and friends, you have a smile on your face, a twinkle in your eye, and you point your finger and say, F-U, everybody. Remember to add right away, capital N, capital N. I say, where'd you get that? I said, I listened to Barry Shore, The Joy of Living. And he wants everybody to tell the world, F-U. Capital N, capital N. So before we go and we introduce you to our amazing guest who's going to shower you with insights that are really going to shift your world and shift. Remember, some people have a habit of dropping that F. I don't know why, but shift happens. I want to ask you, I want to share with you to utilize the two most powerful words in the English language. And I'd like you to use them three times a day. Well, you know what three looks like. Three times a day. For the rest of your life, from now on, consciously and conscientiously. And these two words are, drum roll, fanfare, da-da, da-da. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank stands for to harmonize and network kindness. To harmonize and network kindness. The Dalai Lama has been quoted saying and read in his writings, be kind whenever possible. It's always possible, he says. So imagine when we go back to the coffee shops regularly, you walk in, you order your fancy latte for $5, and you sit down and somebody brings it to you. You say, thank you. Imagine you walk in the coffee shop, you order your fancy latte for $5, and you sit down, a few minutes go by, nobody brings it to you. So you go to the counter and say, oh, I'm sorry, we forgot, we're so busy, we'll bring it to you. You sit down, a few more minutes go by, somebody brings it to you, still say, thank you. You're walking out of the coffee shop, it's raining out. Somebody holds the door open for you. You say, thank you. You're walking out of the coffee shop, it's raining, and somebody slams the door on you. You say, thank you. You're in traffic, you're late for an appointment, and somebody cuts you off. You say, thank you. You get up in the middle of the night and you stub your toe and it hurts. You say, thank you. To harmonize and network kindness. Kind stands for keep inspiring noble deeds. And I can't think of anybody that I'd like to introduce you to right now that inspires noble deeds more than Jotham Stein. Jotham, are you here? And can you say a big hello to 368,922 people around the world?
Hello, everybody. And thank you, Barry, for having me on your show.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jonathan, for being here. By the way, when was the last time somebody said F you to you and you laughed?
Never, but except when I heard it, heard you doing it.
Well, Jotham is an attorney. Uh-oh, people are going, wait a minute, I thought you said he's going to give us insights. Yes, this attorney is one of the most accomplished people I've ever had the pleasure of reading about, interacting with, and talking with. And I've been picking his brain about things that he loved and art and in quotes and his ideas. And I want to talk today about his newest book, which is called Even CEOs Get Fired. So I hope that inspires you to say, uh-oh, what's going on here? This is great. Let me lean in and listen, because Jotham, and by the way, his name is Jotham, J-O-T-H-A-M. We may even talk about how that happened, by the way. But Jotham is not just an attorney. He's an attorney that is admitted to the bar in, I think, 7 or 8 different states around the union, and has worked with companies that you know, handled 100+ million-dollar deals, and still is not just a human being, but he's rooted in the humanity of understanding how you can be of benefit to yourself and other people. So we're going to just jump right in, Jotham, with that little introduction. And we might even talk about luge, by the way, later, and rowing, because that fascinates me. You ready? I mean, that really fascinates me. But I want to go right to, why did you write this book? It's an intriguing title, Even CEOs Get Fired. But why did you write it? What prompted you as a high-level, high-income, high-producing attorney to write a book that talks about the foibles of what it means to be in the business world?
Well, it really comes down to one of your acronyms, MAD. I wanted to make a difference to everyone out there, whether they're a newbie coming into employment all the way up to the CEO, because I have so much knowledge over 20, 25 years of practicing about how people can protect themselves and protect themselves when they're coming into employment, protect themselves if they have a non-compete agreement, if they have a change of control agreement, if they're getting fired so they can say thank you at the end of the terrible experience. That's why I went into it. I have so much experience and I wanted to write a book. I wrote the book previously that lawyers use to do employment law. But then I decided I wanted to write a book that would really help everyone. And so that's why I did it. And it's a breezy read, I hope, an easy read. It has 59 stories in it. And literally, your people are listening. They read that book and they read those stories and they might say, hey, that happened to somebody I know. Or they may say, hey, it happened to me. But I have the strategies to help you negotiate and to say thank you at the end of an employment, whether it ends great or whether it ends poorly and you're moving on to the next job.
So this is so wonderful. What Jotham just did, by the way, is he was able to encapsulate, and that's one of the geniuses of him practicing for decades, to give you an idea of what we're going to be unpacking and discussing for the rest of the time together. But I also want to shock you, Jotham, and tell you that in reality, did you know that you're a porn star?
Okay, what does porn stand for?
Porn star stands for Power of Related Narrative, Storytelling Arousing Response.
Okay, that's what it does, actually, all those stories. But
well, that's why I mentioned. So you see, the beauty of what Jotham is bringing to us as a porn star is he chose the process of storytelling to relate to esoteric issues. And I say that esoteric because most everybody that's listening, again, hundreds of thousands of people around the world. And we have people, by the way, just so you should know, Jotham, listening from a large contingent of people listening from the subcontinent of India, a lot of people from China, throughout Europe, Africa, Europe, certainly the United States, Latin America. So people all around the world, almost everybody recognizes they are employed at some level, whether they are employed for someone else in a company or they're self-employed. And they actually believe that they think they're self-employed because everybody works for somebody else. You really work for the customer. So the customer can hire you and fire you at any time. But what Jotham is discussing is the intricacies of what it means to accept that role of employee in an organization. As he said so eloquently, I want to go deep into a couple of the stories. Whether your employment is in the mailroom, and we won't use mailroom anymore because people might think I'm talking about M-A-L-E, the mail, and nobody does mail anymore. Can you imagine this, Jotham? Yeah, I worked my way up from the mailroom. What did you do? Well, I handled all the email. I was in the email room. Those days are gone, right?
But they are, gone.
You know, you're in the secretarial position, male or female, or you're in the C-suite, and the highest level of the C-suite, by the way, because that's what he said. Even CEOs get fired. The ability to understand what it means for both your responsibilities and your rights as an employee are paramount. And I am 72 years on this earth. I have been employed since the age of 12. And I have experienced most of what you just said. Hired, fired, thank you, thank you. Sometimes for the positive, sometimes I didn't realize it was for the positive. And been let go from companies that I founded, ran, and built up into multi-million dollar organization and was summarily dismissed.
That happens all the time, unfortunately.
Well, fortunate or not, but the point is, so I'd like you, if you'd be so kind, let's just jump in and pull out one particular idea and a story that relates to it. And really, let's have fun with this. F you, Jotham.
Absolutely. Do you want me to come up with a story?
Yeah,
or do you,
I'd like you to come up with a story. Because you're the porn star.
So, okay, well, to one, there's a lot of you have people around the world. I don't know if you have anybody listening in Andorra, but in Andorra is a small country between France and Spain. There's an Andorran company in this book. There's a story about a Dutch company. There's a relation to your people in China, Sagarmatha. There's a company called Sagarmatha Limited, and that is...
So let's use China. Let's use China as an example, because China is one of the same time the most dictatorial country in the world and one of the most capitalist-oriented countries in the world.
And so in those countries, there's not a specific story about China, but if you're going to go do business in that country or you're going to be an employee in that country, you need to know what those laws are in that country. So it's not just, even if you're an American, you're going there, if you're going there for 2 weeks to do business or you're going there for 6 months or a year to do business, and that's the point of one of the stories that I talked about in Andorra. It would be the same if you went to China. The character calls up and says to the lawyer, you know, I'm getting 8% of Sagarmatha Limited. I'm going to open that business in the United States. I'm going to make it grow in the United States. And this company is going to go through the roof. In the current lexicon, I'm going to be a unicorn. Right. Well, so the lawyer says, well, Andorra is a perfect example. I'm going to help you write an employment agreement and an agreement with investors to protect yourself so that if you get fired summarily, you can say, thank you, stick out your hand and pay me what it says in the contract, give me the equity in the contract. But it also means you have to go get yourself, in that case, I'm not really sure, and I'm still not sure. You might need a Spanish lawyer or a French lawyer or an Andorran lawyer to help you out, because what does it mean to have 8% of a company that's in Andorra? And that's the learning for anybody, for example, who's going to travel the world. In the case of the Netherlands or the Dutch, do you know if you insult the Dutch ruler, there's a story about that, you can get 5 years in jail. And if you insult the Dutch queen, because it's now a king, I think, in the Netherlands, you can get 4 years in jail. But that's not too bad. If you insult the Thai king, 15 years behind bars.
Now, by the way, I am intimately familiar with such things when you speak of Thai for several reasons. Number one, my wife is Thai. Number two, I spent many years in Thailand. Number three, at this very moment when we're speaking, Jotham, in the year 2021, the military junta that really runs the country but has a king as a figurehead, is using that law to squash any kind of protest for democracy, as it were. And you're seeing it, by the way, in Hong Kong right now. Now, by the way, Hong Kong was, until very recently, one of the most free places in the world to transact, do, build business. And literally within the past 11 months, 18 months, has contracted and now is under the thumb, heel, boot of China. So I'm sure there's a lot of scrambling by people who are employed through, by, and to former Hong Kong companies throughout the world, but even in primarily in the United States, who represent interests that are now Chinese, not necessarily Hong Kongese. Am I right on that?
You're definitely right on that. And you're even more right than maybe you know, because China tries to exert its influence here in the United States by if they don't like somebody who's done something, the government can call, and they have a billion people, a billion more than a billion people as a market out there. And so they try to exert their influence even here in the United States, never mind via Hong Kong, where they've always had some influence. And now, of course, they do exactly what you said there. The Hong Kong, free Hong Kong sort of society and companies, they're really, you know, run by the Chinese.
So this is fascinating when it comes to, let's go very pointedly to the entertainment industry. Now, the entertainment industry is not just movies, as it were, because entertainment is sports. So there's movies, there's sports, anything that is a product of the United States, which is the entertainment capital of the world, in my humble opinion, at this moment, and its influence overseas. And it used to be, of course, that the influence ran from the United States to overseas. Right. Now, let's use China as the example. The Chinese are at least saying, we're your equal, if not, even maybe your boss in certain areas, because you just mentioned, we have a billion people in our marketplace. May I repeat that? We have a billion people in our marketplace, and they're not as, they're not eating rice out of a bowl anymore. They still do that, but that's not their wage. They are affluent as well as influential. They are affluential. So let's speak about that when it comes to the influence in the United States, vis-a-vis companies that you regularly represent and people you represent in Silicon Valley or in Hollywood.
Well, I mean, the wealth that comes from some of those countries in China and some of the other Asian countries, they're investors in many of the startups that you find. And so they exercise influence that way. They also exercise influence just in the marketplace. It's part of a much grander scheme, in my opinion, of the Chinese trying to, have hegemony, control lots of parts of the world. If you were to go to Africa, for example, or South America, you might find a lot of Chinese projects from the government, building roads, for example, building the telecom, the infrastructure. So the effort they try to influence in the startup world or in the world of entertainment, like you were talking about, is just part of the bigger scheme, the grander scheme. You know, they've been around 5,000 plus years. For them, United States is, a new place.
We're the blip on the radar screen.
Right. When you go to China, you can look at places that were inhabited 5,000 years ago. They had dynasties going back thousands of years. So they think their epistemology, the way they're thinking, is different than we do.
So let's talk about thinking, and let's talk about just the United States for the moment. So someone comes along and he or she is hired now by a company to do certain things. Again, responsibilities, rights and responsibilities, because they work in tandem, hand in glove. What, if you be so kind, think of two very pointed ideas that any employee should have in his or her mind when they're about to sign an agreement with a company that they're going to join. What are two of the most important issues they should be thinking about?
Number one, what's in the agreement? How's it going to help you and make you a better person and protect your family? Number two, do you really want to start that job? Have you done your due diligence? And is that the place you want to work in? Will that make you happier, or in your words, a more purposeful life? And so those are the two biggest things. Understand the contract, and are you working in the right place? And are you working the right place? Can mean many different things. It can mean this is my best place I've ever wanted to work in my life. And this is it. This is my dream. It can also mean I'm using this as a stepping stone. Or it can mean that I'm using this I need this job because I have no other choice, but in the future, I'm going to try to do something else. The contract itself, your offer letter, whatever you get, you should understand what that means. You should, wherever jurisdiction, wherever you are, what does it mean to sign a non-compete agreement if you have to sign one? What does it mean to sign a confidentiality agreement if you have to sign one? What does it mean, your offer letter? Like in my book, there's one of the 59 stories is, it's titled Your Offer Letter Sucks. And it tells you read through it, and you read through it. Whoever your listeners are there, if they're ever going to sign an offer, an offer letter, an employment agreement, you read through that and you understand. At least you can negotiate if you have leverage, or you can go in with your eyes wide open.
So you're saying, if I may be so bold to put it in my words, wake up, everybody. It's your responsibility, not the company's, to know what you're doing. And so Jotham is not just offering, he is sharing with you advice that would normally cost you thousands and thousands of dollars. Because he's saying to you, I'm just rephrasing something, know why you want the position, the job. If you want it because it's a stepping stone, so that's great, admit it. If you want it because you want to be there, I want to be a Google neck, a Facebook neck, a Twitter neck. I don't know why you want to, but let's say you want to, because that's what reverberates with you. But also understand that when you're given an agreement, it's your responsibility to know what it means. And if that means for you to invest money, I didn't say spend, invest money in hiring someone who can interpret it for you, we'll call that person an attorney, or maybe a business consultant, but will understand with you what your rights and your responsibilities are, I think it's incumbent upon the individual to do that. Now, I come from a world where, as a younger person, we didn't have such things. When I was in my teens and 20s, 50 plus years ago, it was not that common, Jotham, to have an offer letter when I walked into a place of employment. But today, I think that everybody is given an offer letter of some kind, even if it's only a commission-based business or a situation. So as I said, it's you have a responsibility to know what you're being offered, and you should know why you want to do it. What you just said, Jotham, I think is one of the most important aspects of your book. Know why you want the job. Because if Absolutely. You do that, if you know your why, then other things may make less of a difference. Am I correct?
100% correct. And I could have said it better about investment. Some of the times the best thing you can do for yourself, the biggest investment, is to know what you're signing and why you're signing it. And, sometimes that investment doesn't pay off until the last day of your employment.
Whoa, those are big words. And on that hook, we're going to go have, we love sponsors. We're going to let them speak. Come back, because this man is overflowing with goodness for you. Be right back after these brief messages. Don't go away. This is great. Imagine the kind of place you would want to shop for your favorite fur baby pet. Honestpets.co. Well, you found it. Honestpets.co, not .com, .co. This is your go-to spot for the best, the cleanest pet treats that exist anywhere on the planet. All of the brands go through a rigorous review to make sure they meet the high standards of cleanliness, health benefits, and naturalness. This site was started by a husband and wife team, and it's veteran-owned, and that care about pets, especially dogs and cats, and coming soon, bird treats. These are very nice young people who really care about making a difference, because a portion of proceeds go to support veteran organizations with a focus on service dogs. This is the place where you want to go. You want to tell your friends. This has the finest, yummiest, freshest, all-natural treats and stuff for your fur baby. So go there, honestpets.co. honestpets.co. Do it now. Good day, beautiful, bountiful, beloved beings. As most of you know, I am 72 years chronologically,
and recovering from being a quadriplegic. But now, to stay active, I swim 2 miles a day, 6 days a week. Hello. Now, you can imagine I know a thing or two about aches and pains. And until recently, I thought they're just part of the fact of life you deal with every day. But then I tried 100% drug-free Relief Factor. I've been taking their convenient packs 3 times a day, and I can tell you, I am feeling noticeably better. You hear that? Noticeably better. Relief Factor is giving me more oomph and less oomph. And the secret, I've been told because I investigated, is there are 4 ingredients. 4 key ingredients. Each one supports a different metabolic pathway in the body, which allows the inflammation that I may have to get reduced from my back, my hips, or my knee. And if you have everyday aches and pains, I urge you to check out Relief Factor. It's 100% drug-free and designed to be taken every single day. It's not going to hurt your tummy. You can get out and you can stay out of pain. So to make this really easy and to make it so there's no barrier, you really want to do this, go to relieffactor.com/joy, relieffactor.com/joy, and check out their quick start program. It's a 3-week program discounted to $19.95, and the founders, a father and son team named Seth and Pete Talbert, they are here to get rid of aches and pains. So do what I did. Go to relieffactor.com/joy. Order the 3-week quick start for yourself. You'll be glad you did.
Good day, beautiful, bountiful, beloved, immortal beings, and good-looking people. Remember, you're good-looking because you're always looking for and finding the good, and we have good in abundance. By the way, the word good is very interesting, Jonathan. Good is spelled G-O-O-D. Now, if we take that second O, make a little snippet in it, and elongate it, you have the word gold. Now, gold is a wonderful word, and it's going to answer the interesting question that people ask all throughout life. Can you buy happiness? The answer is yes. You just have to know the right currency. The gold of goodness is the right currency. When you think in good, speak in good, and do good, then you have the right currency. You can buy happiness. And that's what you're providing here for, as you mentioned, the 3 E's, executives, entrepreneurs, and employees with your book. Even CEOs get fired. 59 stories that fire people up to learn about making sure that you have the right protection, and you're going to know why you want to be there and invest a bit of money and time to make sure that your offer letter, your contract reads the way you want it. So what I'd like you to do, wonderful Jotham, is give us a story without revealing any names, unless you want to, of some high-level CEO who was fired and that he or she didn't realize that it could be done and said, huh?
I can't use any names other than the individuals that gave me, there's a number of people that gave me endorsements in the front of the book. I never talk about my clients, but what you just described is a genre, think of it as a book. It happens all the time, particularly with people who have never had it happen before, or don't have friends in the world, or entrepreneurs. That it happens all the time. They get forced out of their own company. They didn't realize it could happen. Sometimes it happens because they didn't read the contracts, particularly if investments involved. And what you said earlier, if I can go back to that, it's your responsibility to know your contracts and what you're doing in the company. In a company, when a company gives you an employment agreement or an offer letter, it doesn't matter whether you're coming out and it's your first job and you're signing an offer letter and confidentiality agreement and non-compete agreement in many states, or you're the CEO of the company, shrewd, have done it before, have always had A pluses in your life. That company cares about protecting itself and having as much control over you as possible. That's what the company wants to do. So your responsibility to yourself, to look out for yourself, is to say, no, I want to get as much protection as I can, as much control as I can, depending on the leverage in the situation. And there are so many times people come into my office and they say to me some story, a CEO. And I say, you should have called me 6 months ago. They didn't know to call, but someone who's seen it before, the genre, the over and over again, would know right away that you're on the way out, that somebody's trying to get rid of you.
So let's talk about two things, one at the same time, because again, I have been in the position. As smart as I am, right. I've been in the position, and I even thought I was smart enough to understand it. But you, the best smart is to realize you're not smart enough to know everything. Now you're really becoming smart. But let's talk the non-compete process a little bit. And I'd like you to, if you can, just wax a little eloquent, if you know the story, about one of the most famous CEOs in the world who was fired from his company with a lot of money, but still fired from the company that he started, came back later. That was Steve Jobs. Right. Let's talk about non-compete for the moment, because I think it's one of the least understood of aspects of business, because we're in the United States of America. And really, this is the United States of America. There's a federal national system, but each state has its own unique jurisdictions and laws, sometimes even by counties, but laws vis-a-vis competition. So can you speak a little bit about that in terms of in a broad base? Even though we have an international audience, it's important for people to understand these nuances.
Okay, so actually this is applicable because there's non-competes in Europe, for example, and many other places in the world as well. So a non-compete basically says you're an employee, you work for my company. If you leave for any reason, you can't go work for another company that competes with the prior company. So what does that mean? It really restricts you as a worker. You wind up, imagine you have a family, imagine you need the income. You now imagine you're good at something. And there's a story in my book about a tile, somebody who sells tiles for a living. And he worked at a wood company before, right, selling wood flooring. And he went to a tile company. But because the tile company competes with the wood company in the flooring, he wasn't able to take the new job, which doubled his salary. So this happens all the time, and it restricts your ability to move. It is anti-competitive. Now, there's a few states in America where non-competes are unenforceable as a matter of law. The biggest is California. So Steve Jobs, who you spoke about, now, I didn't have anything to do with Apple or Steve Jobs, so I want to be clear about that, but the story is well known. He went to another company, and then he sold his company back to Apple and came back in that way. But he didn't have to. He could have walked right across the street in California and started a new Apple, call it Apple II, call it Pear One, whatever you want. There's a few other states that are like that, Oklahoma, I think it's North or South Dakota, but California being the biggest. In California, you can walk out the street from your prior company, whether you got fired for cause or whether you're the CEO and made millions, doesn't matter, and start another competitive company. But you can't do that in Florida. You can't do that in Texas. You can't do that in many places. And so people
do a little bit of a deeper dive. Could the person, if they weren't fired, voluntarily leave their position and go across the street and open up a competing company? Because everything they took with them wasn't just their physical being. They took their mind and all of their intellectual property, because they know everything about this company. They say, wait a minute, I'm going over there because I can do it faster, better, cheaper, et cetera.
You have now raised the issue of the inevitable disclosure doctrine. That means I have it all in my head, so I can't compete and go across the street. The inevitable disclosure doctrine is enforceable even if you don't sign a non-compete agreement in certain states, I think Ohio. In California, it's absolutely not the law. The only way you can be stopped in employment, just as an employment matter, not if you sold your company or something, but the only way you can be stopped as an employee from going to work for the competitor or starting the competition is if you take the trade secrets. You can't do that, or the proprietary information of the prior company. But you can walk across the street without any trade secrets, without any proprietary information, and start again. And the law is clear. There is no inevitable disclosure doctrine in California. But many other states, they have a problem. Even if you didn't sign the non-compete, the courts say, well, how can you possibly compete? You would have that information. And what it really means is some people get stuck in jobs for a long time. So they have a hard time, you know, pursuing who they are and what they want to be, because they become indentured. They're getting paid, don't get me wrong, but they're indentured servitude, basically, because they can't compete and they can't leave because they have families. So the moral of that story might be, and it's changing now in America, not every place is like this, but the moral of the story might be move to Oklahoma, move to South Dakota, move to California, if that's what you care about, moving around. And it's even more complicated if I can, you just were talking about, we have a federal system. So if you sign a non-compete, for example, as often happens in Florida, and you move to California, if that's what you want to do, it's not so easy. You can't just say I'm in California now. There's a story in my book about that. Because Florida can enforce the law against you, even though you're in California.
So you're reading my mind. I just want to ask you, are there restrictive clauses, as it were, state to state, that could reach out and touch somebody? So, right, somebody in Florida is working for a company that is in a business. They say, this is really nice. I like this. You know something? I think California, this would do really well. We're not in California even. So you go to California and you leave your job, you quit, you open up in California. Can the arm of Florida reach out and touch you?
Unfortunately, absolutely. And that happens all the time. And it could be a real problem. Minnesota is another place. So, for example, let's say you're in Minnesota and you're in the healthcare industry. There's a big insurer there, for example. And then you say, well, you know what? I don't like Minnesota anymore. I'm great people, but it's too cold. I want to go to California. And you move to San Diego. And you say, well, I'm in California now. I'm a voter in California. I have a car in California. But if you sign a non-compete in Minnesota, your former employer can go to Minnesota court, get an injunction against you, and that's enforceable. Thanks to what the Supreme Court said, it's enforceable in California. Even though the same California court would never in a million years enforce a case brought before it, it has to enforce its sister state judgment, in this case, an injunction. So that does happen.
Let me make a bold statement, because I am loving this. This is, by the way, for everybody listening, and people are just loving this also. We got a lot of questions, a lot of comments up here. People are loving this. Here we are in the year 2021. This is the 21st century. You mentioned indentured servitude. We didn't want to call it slavery, of course, but indentured servitude. And yet they seem to be completely oil and water when it comes to our thinking process about the 21st century, right? And the idea of no geography. Look, what we're doing right now is a perfect example. This has no physical boundary. We are in the world of social audio, social media, et cetera, et cetera. There are no geographic boundaries anymore. And yet we're now talking about minutiae of real boundary. People are bound by the constraints of legal systems that were built centuries ago and were built around a particular process, and they seem to be, in my humble opinion at the moment, again, I'm listening to you, Jotham, and loving it, built around systems that were not designed to enable people to fly and be free and create more. In other words, I'm not here to hurt the company in Minnesota, like your example. Yep. I just say, hey, look, I'm in California and I'm expanding the franchise, as it were, in the sense of enabling more people to take advantage of this process that I know all about. You hear what I'm saying?
It's exactly what you say. And it extends not just to our states, it extends to, like I said, countries. So, for example, the Netherlands, for example, Holland, Germany, they have very strict non-compete rules. So those people can't even get up and move to the United States if they're in the same field and they go for another job. It can be enforced against them. So we do have, and you know, this is something actually, to be honest with you, that both Democrats and Republicans, I could say, in the American system are hypocritical about, right? In those states that have non-competes, doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican, they're going to be pro non-compete and anti-allowing the labor, the person to move from one company to another. And the concepts are old. In our internet age, we got these laws that you have to follow around. They follow around not just in non-compete world, but in other things, in employment and elsewhere, that, you know, they haven't been fixed, if you will. But they haven't been modernized, I guess is a better way to describe it.
So this is wonderful. I want to talk about right-to-work laws. I want to talk about luge. I want to talk about rowing. And we only have a few minutes left, so I'm going to ask you two quick questions. Ready? Number one, will you come back again?
Absolutely. Be happy to.
Number two, did you read the book Boys in the Boat?
I started the book. I got through the first chapter. I didn't read the rest, but it's on my book list of books to read.
You need to read it. Why? Because Jotham was a rower.
I was a rower. Actually, behind me is rowing. I rowed and I did luge, which is for people out there, it's sledding or
yeah. The luge is so different than sledding. I mean, luge is 85 miles an hour in a little box hurtling through. We'll talk about that another time because it's so out there. And he didn't just do it; he competed on world class stage and level. Okay, right between the eyes, wonderful Jyothi. Ready? I'm going to give you 80 seconds to answer this question. What is your most fervent desire?
What is my most fervent desire? Honestly, in this case right now, is for people to buy my book and use it to make themselves better. They'll learn so much from it. It'll help them protect themselves in employment. I mean, I have 25 years of experience, and it doesn't matter what they're doing out there. I wrote the book because I wanted to make a difference and I wanted to help people because I like I said, I see things. People come to me and I say, why didn't you come to me 6 months ago? I could have told you what was going to happen. Not with 100% certainty, but if I went to Vegas, I bet and I give long odds, 10 to 1, that I'm going to get it right. Well, this book will help people help
this
people help
man
themselves.
Is mad. He makes a difference. And as I said, the reason you tuned in to The Joy of Living with your humble host, Barry Shore, is because you want to be the best you possible. Knowing to be the best you possible, it's your responsibility. Get the book, learn some of the inside stuff so that when you go and are offered a letter of employment or a contract, you will be smart enough to know that you're not smart enough and that you'll really get the information that you need so you'll be able to become the best you possible. Because remember, the joy of living works with the three fundamentals of life. Number one, life. Your life has purpose, as Jyothi is saying. And if you do number that, if you have life of purpose, you'll go mad. You'll make a difference. You want to in this life. And number three, uncover the secrets and the power of everyday words and terms like WWW. What a wonderful world. Smile, seeing miracles in life every day. Or as my niece says, seeing miracles in everyday life. Create the kind of world we all want to live in, causing rethinking, enabling all to excel. That's what Jyothi is talking about, rethinking, using your mind, and use four-letter words, love, life, grow, hope, pray, play, free, gift, work. And tell everybody, F you. Say, where'd you learn that? Barry Shore told me, tell the world, F you, capital N, capital N. And when you do that, you make the world a better place. You become the catalyst. You become a cog, a channel of goodness, a child of God. And everything about you resonates with goodness. You bring hope to the world, helping others progress every day. That's what Jyothi did. That's what he does. And that's why he lives a life that is given over to helping other people. Dedicated man for decades in the world of law, now giving over to us the ability for you to be the best you possible. So we're going to do two things, Jyothi, in front of 372,820 people around the world. I'm going to give you a big hug and then I'm going to give everybody a blessing. Here's a hug. One, two, three. And our blessing to everybody is go forth, live exuberantly, spread the seeds of joy, happiness, peace, and love. Go mad. Go make a difference.